Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We are a nation of immigrants, and Iowa is a state of immigrants. A new book from the Iowa Writers' House celebrates the diversity of our state with the first ever story collection featuring original stories from immigrant and first-generation Iowans. This is the result of the state's first writing fellowship for immigrant and bicultural writers. The book is We the Interwoven, and the stories within it are as diverse as the contributors. It contains nonfiction, fiction, folktale, poetry, and beautiful illustrations. And this hour, I'll talk with two of the contributors to the collection, Chuy Renteria and Saragat Elieva. But I'm going to start with Andrea Wilson, the founder of the Iowa Writers' House and editor of the collection. Andrea, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Charity. It's such a pleasure.
And for people who aren't familiar with the Iowa Writers' House, give me a little bit of background. What is your mission?
Our mission is to be Iowa's literary organization, community center, and a place where people can come and learn to write.
All right. And this is in Iowa City. It's been around since 2014.
Absolutely.
And this was a way to provide a home for writers outside of the university community, right?
Exactly. We are such a famous state for writing. We're known all over the world, really, for our Iowa Writers Workshop and all of the wonderful programs that happen inside our universities and colleges. But surprisingly enough, even though Iowa City was a UNESCO City of Literature, there wasn't a literary house for the public to come write in. And so that's the place I created, right there on the corner of Davenport and Gilbert Street in the historic Emma Harvard House.
What made you think there was this need?
I desperately needed it, Charity, I'll be honest. I was a lonely writer, and I really just wanted to be able to get together with other people and talk about my stories.
And who comes to the Iowa Writers' House?
These days, just about every kind of person, and that's the most beautiful thing. We have people young and old, people who are professional writers, people who are burgeoning amateur writers. We offer workshops year-round on all sorts of different topics and levels. And everyone that comes in is someone we want to feel at home.
So this work that we're talking about this hour, We the Interwoven, is the outcome of the first ever Bicultural Iowa Writers Fellowship. Tell me about this idea. Where did the idea for this fellowship come from?
Well, while I was running these workshops for the first 2 or 3 years, I realized that there really is kind of a barrier of entry to a certain point to getting your stories written and published. And one of them is time, and the other one is money. And if you are an immigrant or someone who has come from another place, there's a good chance that your life is dedicated to working, providing for your family. And I just thought, if Iowa needs to hear the stories of these people, how will we ever have a chance to hear them if they're not able to pass that barrier of entry? So I had an idea to create a program that removed all the obstacles from helping them learn to write all the way through to getting their work edited and published, and that was the genesis of this program.
How did you make that happen? I mean, it's a great idea, but it's not an inexpensive idea.
You are right. Well, a lot of grit. I started out with a concept that I pitched to some family and friends, and people loved the idea. And then I wrote a proposal for an Iowa Arts grant from the Iowa Arts Council, which is supported by the National Endowment for the Arts. And in July 2017, I found out we'd won our first grant. So it was a $10,000 grant, and then I was responsible for fundraising the matching $10,000. And we got right to work, designed our program, and by October, we had a call for submissions across Iowa, working with our Iowa Library Associations to let everyone know we were looking for storytellers.
And what made someone qualify to be one of these storytellers?
All that we asked is that they have a passion for telling their story, that they would be willing to work in a 6-month fellowship to learn to write, and be willing to have their stories published. And other than that, it was to be an immigrant or first or second generation Iowan.
All right, first or second generation.
Mm-hmm. And what we got in this first selection of wonderful fellows was one person who had come directly from Azerbaijan, Saragat Elieva, and then two wonderful people who were born in Iowa but whose parents came here, Chuy Renteria, whose family came from border towns in Mexico, and Melissa Palma, whose family immigrated here from the Philippines.
And how many applications did you get?
We had 20 in our first year, which we were really excited about. It was a young program. No one had ever heard of it before. And at that time, it was kind of my pipe dream that I just kept talking about with people.
How did you decide?
We had a review council. That's a really important thing when you're looking at work, I think, is to have different perspectives. So our review council was Hugh Ferrer, the associate director of the International Writing Program, which is one of the most famous international residencies in the world, right here in Iowa City. He's the associate director. Maggie Conroy, the wife of the late Frank Conroy, who was the director of the Writers Workshop, and Alicia Jettelo, a freelance editor who also worked for the Iowa Review, and me.
And so with the fellowship, tell me what you offered to the participants. You chose three individuals, and they took 6 months, but what could you give them?
So our goal was really to give them time, education, mentorship, and then obviously the publishing support. And that looked like a cash stipend, three residencies at the writer's house where they came for a long weekend, workshops with professional instructors lined up during those residencies where they would write and workshop their work together, professional headshots, and then working with them on things like biography writing and artist statements and really helping develop themselves as artists so that when this program was over, the book would be a platform that they'd have, but also just that, you know, their own path forward for what they wanted to do in the future.
And you were looking for people with different backgrounds and different stories. What kind of work were you looking for? Was there an expectation of the kind of work that they would produce during the fellowship?
You know, that part was going to be the hardest because you want someone who has a story, but you're hoping to see a glimmer of the ability to tell it in a way that would transfix a reader. And so we weren't looking for professional skill in the sense that maybe they'd taken so many writing classes that it was overprosed, but we were hoping that they'd have a point of view or a way to tell a story that seemed magical.
And this collection that you've put out with these three fellows, as I mentioned, I mean, it's a very diverse collection of work. When you're telling someone about this collection, I mean, it's not just that the writers have such different backgrounds, but within the work, there's so much difference. What do you tell people about the collection when you say, hey, you should pick this up because
this book represents the diversity of what's happening in our state that's untold? And that diversity is, there's depth and there's width and breadth, and it's absolutely as different as this book is. The book has nonfiction stories and essays about life and family and tradition and culture. It has poetry of struggle and colonialism and the impact of one's home country. And then when you come to a new place here in the United States, how you bring that with you. There are mystical and magical fairy tales from Sadagat, who, being from Azerbaijan, has a personality and an essence to her unlike anyone I've ever met. And on top of that, in the second residency, we discovered she was an illustrator. So now, unplanned, we ended up with these beautiful illustrations in this book, which were such a gift.
Your fellows got to explore themselves in a very open-ended way. Did that make it extra challenging?
I had to learn to roll with the flow, Charity. You are really astute. Yes, it did. We started out planning with things being more nonfiction based, that they would all be about everyone's sort of family story or immigration story. And the truth is, everyone expresses themselves differently. And Sadagat in particular, we learned her true gift was in these kind of folk tales. And they really remind me, remember Aesop's Fables? Mm-hmm. Just from the beginning, I could tell that her writing had that kind of fable-esque quality. And we just made a decision kind of in the middle of the process. That was her dream. It was her gift. And why would you stifle someone's voice in that to try to have them write a different, you know, in a different style? And what's come out of it is that every time she reads at a public reading, you know, I see tears or someone's, you know, head kind of turned to the side as they think about all of the magic of their childhood.
We are going to take a short break. We'll dig into some of that work in just a moment. With me, Andrea Wilson, the founder of the Iowa Writers House and the editor of this new collection, We the Interwoven, an anthology of bicultural Iowa. It is the product of the very first bicultural Iowa Writers Fellowship. And we'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guests this hour represent this new book. It's called We the Interwoven, an anthology of bicultural Iowa. And it's the product of the first Bicultural Iowa Writers Fellowship, which is put on by the Iowa Writers House in Iowa City. I've been talking with Andrea Wilson. She's the founder of the Iowa Writers House and the editor of this collection. And now I want to talk to a couple of the contributors to this collection. First off, Chuy Renteria, who is grew up in West Liberty, Iowa. His mother and father both grew up in Mexico in communities near the border with the United States, and they were drawn to Iowa by the meatpacking industry. Chuy himself is an artist, writer, a dancer, and a teacher and public engagement coordinator for Hancher Auditorium. Hello, Chuy.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having us.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And tell me when you heard about this fellowship and what drew you to it.
It was, Andrea and I talked about it a lot. It was very serendipitous. It was one of those things where I had been writing in high school, and then it kind of tapered off, and I really got into dancing. And I did what a lot of young people do, is think that they have to choose. And so I chose dance, and I, you know, my writing just kind of went to the wayside. And it was a good, you know, decade. And I had written a little bit, some essays and stuff, but not anything substantial. And then I just came across the application, and it was Andrea sending it to some of my coworkers, and me kind of like seeing it in the pass off, and it just, everything that it spoke directly to me. I mean, obviously in terms of like my makeup and who I am and where I'm from, but also just where I was in terms of my career and wanting that expression and wanting to get back into writing. So I saw it, and I told my coworker, Rob, I was like, I'm going to apply. And he's like, oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, and how does that work with your life? Did you take a semester or 6 months off of work, or did you try to fit this in?
No, I just fit it in.
Wow.
I just fit it in. It ended up working out really well, because the way that I've been talking a lot about the writing process with some peers of mine, and the way that I look at writing is it's almost like a refuge. It isn't something where one of my biggest pet peeves is when people think of writing as this, like, you know, they slit their wrist and let it all come out. For me, it's more about it's health. When I'm the healthiest I can be is when I can be able to write whenever I can. So it fit really well that when I'm, you know, working my 9 to 5 and I come home and it's 9 o'clock, I can get an hour in writing where I'm really tired, but it kind of gives me life. So it worked out really well.
All right. Well, and will you read a little bit for us from one of the selections?
Yes.
In the book?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what you're going to read.
So I'm going to read the very beginning of the first story, which is a story about work. And it starts off as this kind of a really general look at all these jobs I've had and then how that kind of interconnects with my identity. And then I consider that the preamble to a bigger story focused on a summer that I roofed with my brother, and kind of how that was a big metaphor for, you know, our relationship with work.
Yeah.
So this is called A Story About Work. Let me tell you about my relationship with work. Because if you're Mexican in America, you have a relationship with work. And it doesn't matter if you're first generation, third, undocumented, or anything in between, it's a complicated relationship. If you're Mexican in America, work isn't just work. Work is how people look at you if you have an accent. Work is what happens when you are a bunch of Mexicans on the roof of a white person's house. Paisas and coconuts, undocumented middle-aged men, and college kids who can't speak Spanish, all on one roof. But the people driving along the road were one and the same and hidden. Mexicans on a roof doing a job the drivers would rather not do. One of the first jobs I had was at the grocery store, produce section. I applied and they responded the same day. The conversation started with technicalities, availability, and context, but veered when the HR person on the phone asked if I was responding to their ad. I wasn't. I just needed a job and applied. The ad was for individuals who could speak English and Spanish. I don't remember if they asked for Mexican-American specifically. I don't know if they could legally do that, but that was exactly what they were looking for. HR lady asked me point blank, "You can speak to our Spanish-speaking customers then, right?" If we have a strained relationship with work, then first-generation Mexican-Americans feel that strain compounded due to Spanish. Here's the thing. I can understand Spanish. For the most part. The percentage number I throw out is 80% understanding. My parents talk to me all in Spanish, and I reply with this jilted, jagged Spanglish. It's for the most part English with a few pedos and comos peppered throughout. My wife even pointed out that my English changes when I talk to my parents. It becomes simpler. I have an accent. I didn't realize this until she told me. A sample reply to my parents' question could be, "No, I worked long, pero I don't know when, cuando, como la ocho, yeah, no sé, I don't know." My code switching is misfires, buttons that stick and repeat themselves.
Chuy Renteria reading from the first story in his part of the book, a story about work. This is from the collection We the Interwoven, an anthology of bicultural Iowa. And let's talk about your life story a little bit more, because when you said college student on the roof who can't speak Spanish, I mean, you were talking about yourself. And yep. People, a lot of people in Iowa know a little bit about West Liberty, which is a community with a lot of Mexican Americans yep. living in it, and also a community where the school system has really redesigned itself to strengthen the community and work with the people in the community. But it sounds like you did not grow up with a bilingual education.
No, well, yeah, that's when you talk to any person who is the child of immigrants living in a majority country where the language isn't the same. You have a lot of the same, I think, complications and challenges. So I grew up in West Liberty, but their dual language immersion program, which they implemented when I was maybe a junior in high school. So, I mean, I completely missed it. And I tell people now that we had like Univision come and do a news story when our dual language immersion program was like off and running. And it was one of the first of its kind in the state. And West Liberty is doing so many amazing things. But for all of us, like my generation, they're like, yeah, and that was, you know,
that
5 years
great,
after
right.
I couldn't. But it's one of those things it's really tricky, and I talk about it in this story, and it's something that I like to talk about a lot now, because I think what I did that time period where I tapered off from my writing, it was almost like I felt like my identity wasn't worthy of being expressed. Because I say it a lot, like for the Mexicans, I wasn't Mexican enough. For the white people, I wasn't white enough. So that translated to my writing. And a lot of times it wasn't like white people that I was concerned about whether they would, because, you know, I'm, you know, close to Iowa City and this the city of literature and all these things. It was the like the Mexicans that I was like, does my opinion matter? Like, I say coconuts. Coconut means brown on the outside, white on the inside. And it's one of those things where I think there's a lot of other Mexican Americans who have this struggle with their identity and whether they're valid and you know, what's the tenuous grasp they have on their cultural traditions and norms. And I think all of us are at a point where we're trying to make that work for ourselves in our own way, because we don't know the language in a way that's, you know, real. So we have to figure out what traditions we can grasp, that we can kind of figure out with our parents, with our peers, with our sisters and brothers. So.
Well, and you write a lot about your relationships with your siblings, which is really fascinating. I want to ask you, though, I'm calling you Chuy. That's the name that you go by. But your given name is Jesus.
Yes.
So was that an extra challenge for you? I mean, growing up with the name Jesus in the United States, where although obviously there's a lot of Christianity in the United States, a lot of Christianity in Mexico, kids in the United States do not get named Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is funny. I'm smiling right now because this is on my mind, because this is literally a footnote that I have on a story that I'm writing right now. It's because it's my name, and I go by Chuy. And the only other time that I would be called Jesus or Jesus or Jesus was during school. the first day that the teacher would say, "And is there a Jesus?" I'm like, "It's Chewy. Don't even worry about that." Or at like the last job that I had, I worked at a day center for people with special needs, and they all would say Jesus. And that was, and when I went to Hampshire, I made it a definitive choice to be like, "I don't. It's Chewy." Like, my parents call me Chewy. Everybody calls me Chewy. And the interesting thing that I say about that is it's a really kind of interesting window into a lot of the things that I talk about because, as a quick aside, a TA at the University of Iowa was accidentally sending me emails to a Chewy that she had in her class in undergrad. And I finally figured it out, and I reached out to this Chewy who's from West Liberty. And I told him, like, "Hey, I think she, you know, I think she just got us, like, you know, she's probably thinking, like, oh, there's a Jesus that's a Chewy. There could only be one of those in the world." And, like, I know about 12 Chewies alone in West Liberty. It's one of the most common names in the world. And I think that's a really interesting, you know, we're talking about, like, ethnocentrism. We're talking about, like, living in Iowa. And it's interesting to see the people say, like, "Oh, Chewy, like Star Wars." Like, I know tons of Chewies that have heard that joke, so you're not the first.
Well, and is Chewy a nickname for Jesus?
Yep. It's for any, like, Mexican-American, Mexican. It's one of those questions. It's one of the very rare questions that is not really Googleable. You can, all the Chewies and I have, we've tried, we've gone on Google and we try to see. And the closest we can get is, you know, no kid wants to be called Jesus on the playground, right? So, and I think it's a lot of it, like, a lot of Mexican nicknames are based on how babies can or cannot pronounce it. Mm-hmm. So they can't say Jesus, Jesus. So they say Seuss. And then maybe got changed to Chus, which the Chewy got through, and it's supposed to be pronounced a little bit closer to one syllable,
okay. But
it's not. Everybody says Chewy, and that's what it is. So, it's fascinating.
So for you, let's talk about the writing process. So writing was something that you had left behind, being part of this fellowship, having the opportunity to write, but a very open-ended assignment. Write whatever. What happened for you? What did you want to express?
So I had the two stories that I had, and one of them was I had a chunk of it that I used for the application to the fellowship. And from all the feedback I got, people said, "You got to put this in the book. This has to be part of it." And I'm like, and that's when I thought about how I can use that as a springboard to the story about roofing, which is this, it's always been on my mind that I want to tell this story in a real way. And so that one I had kind of like in the back of my mind. And the other one, the one that I really, really worked on in the fellowship in terms of like just putting a lot of effort into it, was the second story, which is My Sister, My Homa. And it's really close to me, and it's about, you know, it's fiction, but it's heavily based on my life and my relationship with my sister, who my sister and I had a very contentious growing up. We, you know, you could say we loved each other, but we didn't like each other, and we fought a lot. And she was 5 years older than me, and she would beat me up constantly. So, but now we're really close, and we're the closest of my family. And so I've always wanted to talk about our kind of strange relationship and this place, which is my Homa, which is a little pueblo in Mexico that my dad's parents, my grandparents from my dad's side lived in. And it has 80 people. The last I checked through the census, it has 80 people, 40 men and 40 women. And they just, growing up, they had to make the decision whether they wanted to get electricity or a cell phone tower. So they're like, of course we'd want electricity first. So it's this, it was kind of to me this magical place. And it reminded me of a 100 Years of Solitude. It reminded me of these like literary places that
lost in time.
Yeah, and I've always wanted to write something about it. And I actually I remembered there was the beginning of a story that I had written that I kind of I unearthed not too long ago, and it was about my Homa. And I was reading it, and I was like, oh, this is my attempt to try to ape like the 100 Years of Solitude, like Gabriel Garcia Marquez style. And I think that got too, you know, I got lost in the sauce of that. So
I think almost anyone would.
Yeah. And then coming back to it and working with this fellowship, it was me kind of taking a breath and being like, I think I can tackle this in a real way and do it in a way that that makes sense for this project, that makes sense for myself and where I'm at. So, and I mean, it was a lot of talking to my sister and be like, do you remember this thing? And her being like, that didn't happen. And be like, I'm going to use that in the story. Like, how much of is your memory reality? And right. How much of it is just us confounding
and
our childhood fantasy? Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're going to take another short break. Chuy Renteria is one of the contributors to the new collection, We the Interwoven, an anthology of bicultural Iowa. It's a product of the first bicultural Iowa Writers Fellowship from the Iowa Writers House in Iowa City. Andrea Wilson, the founder of the Iowa Writers House, is also here with us, and I'm going to talk to another one of the contributors here in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about a new collection. It's called We the Interwoven, an anthology of bicultural Iowa. And it's a collection that contains a diverse group of stories from three contributors who were the recipients of the first ever Bicultural Iowa Writers Fellowship from the Iowa Writers House in Iowa City. And I've been talking to one of the contributors, Chuy Renteria, and also the founder of the Iowa Writers House, Andrea Wilson. And now I want to bring Sadegat Alieva into the conversation. Sadegat Alieva was born and raised in Turkan, a suburb of Baku in Azerbaijan. She came to the United States as an adult and settled in Des Moines. She lives there and is a librarian at the Clive Public Library. Sadegat, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Well, and tell me a little bit about your background. You immigrated to the United States as an adult. What brought you here?
So I immigrated to the United States directly to Iowa in 2004 with my little family. My husband, he's from Afghanistan. He was a refugee in my country. There was a time in Azerbaijan, you know, Azerbaijan is a small country. After Soviet Union destroyed, little countries were struggling, and there were a lot of people, refugees in this small land because of the war. Then the government decided that they cannot keep the people from other countries as Afghanistan. So a United Nations office in Baku, they decided to send these families to different points of the world. So that's how it happened. We ended up in Iowa. When we came here, we had two children. My son was 5 years old. My oldest daughter was almost two. Then 2005, we had our last child. She's 13 now.
And coming to the United States, coming to Des Moines, Iowa, had you ever heard of Des Moines before?
No, actually, that's a good question. When they kind of trained us to, you are moving from the country, moving somewhere else, our first state was we're supposed to go to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So I did some researching, looking at the map and learning about that state. Then it was the kind of last minute decision. The night we were flying from Baku, it was 3 o'clock in the morning. I had like almost 2 years old in my arms and almost 5 years old. They didn't sleep. We didn't sleep all night waiting in the airport for our flight. And I saw there's something going on. Everyone runs around and we are not flying. And I asked what's going on. And they said, everything's fine. You don't have to worry. And after a while, they just shoved us in the airport and they told us, you are going to Ohio. And I freaked out right away, you know, mother with two little kids and have no information about whatsoever about Ohio. Only when we landed in Newark, New Jersey, there was a young African-American lady. She was so kind. She greeted us with the help of interpreter, and she explained us, you are not going to Ohio. You are going to Iowa.
Oh.
And she made me feel comfortable because she said, Iowa is a very nice place to be. There is a less criminal. You have little kids. They have really nice schools, and people are so nice. And it turned out to be a true.
Well, good. That's good. Yeah. I mean, starting over at that point in your life. Did you speak English before you came to the United States?
No, we didn't speak. Only the hi and bye. That's a different story also, because me and my husband, we both had like higher degree in college, and we had jobs, and I had a job at theater. I had a bachelor degree in theater. I was a theater manager before we moved to United States. So when you move to new land and with new language and you don't speak, it feels so different, so weird. I remember it was in December before Christmas, and most places are closed, you know. It was a lot of snow. In Baku, we barely get snow. So we would just walk around the city, just walk and read all the signs on the walls. And we can read, but we didn't understand anything. So people talk and walk around you and talk, and you don't understand anything. It feels like you are in a bubble, and the world and life goes around you, and you cannot connect with this life. Also, it feels like I was 37 years old, but it felt like I was a baby. I had to start all over again and learn how to crawl, how to walk, how to talk, how to communicate, how to create a life once again.
What made you want to do this fellowship? I mean, after years of rebuilding your life and becoming a librarian at Clive Public Library, mm-hmm. what made you want to be a part of this bicultural fellowship?
Before we immigrated to the United States, as I said, I was working at theater, and also I worked for paper. I was writing articles. I was writing poetry. I have like a notebooks of poetry with me right at home right now. And I would write also playwrights. And I was looking at it as a hobby, and I enjoy working with words, playing with words. It's just always engaging for me. But it was like after my children grew up and I, you know, learned a new language. Since we moved here, since I didn't speak English, I kind of completely stopped writing. Just focused on learning language, getting a new degree, and finding a job, raising my children. But I feel like the writing was always my call. It was like before summer 2017, last year, and I was at my work and talking to my coworker at the library, and we were just chatting, and I said, you know, I feel like the writing is calling me. I just want to, I want to start writing again. Or I was writing, like, I mean, a little bit there, a little bit here, secretly. And I said, but, you know, I have a small house. I have three children, and my life is so busy. I wish there was a way that I could just go somewhere, take this chunk of time off to just focus on writing, and it's something that I love to do. It didn't take a week. I got this email from my other coworker saying that there's a program like that. They are looking for bicultural writers who used to be a writer, who likes to write, who enjoys to write, who wants to learn more. And when the first time I read the email, I couldn't believe it was right. It was like a reality.
Wow.
I said, it sounds like a dream come true, because
right.
We just talked about it. And then, you know, it's a little bit, you know, kind of scary too, because I never showed my writing to anyone here, and only the closest friends, and I didn't know how good was it or how good I am. And but one of other my coworkers said I should apply for this program, because obviously she was thinking about Iowa Writers Workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And before then, that I didn't even know. I didn't know anything about Iowa City. I didn't know about Iowa Writers Workshop. I didn't know Iowa City was the city of literature. And I have been there only once for some doctor appointment or something. Briefly, I remembered the city. So my coworkers kind of encouraged me to apply. So,
wow. Well, and after reading Chewy's work, I was then very surprised to turn the page, and suddenly I'm reading fairy tales or folk tales and beautiful illustrations that you made to go along with your beautiful stories. And we only have a couple of minutes left, so I'm not going to ask you to read from your stories. But I do want to know, Sadegat, what does it mean to you to have your voice as an Iowan, but a new Iowan, included in this collection, to have people reading this?
Most people don't know, like, the city I was born and grew up, the Baku, and in the world, if you read the history books, it's noted as a book, as a city of oil. But a lot of people don't know there is a great culture and creative literature, culture in that city. So it helps me to kind of represent my country as a country of storytellers, country of magical fairy tales, country of creations and culture.
Sadegat, thank you so much for talking with me.
You're welcome. Thank you, too.
Sadegat Alieva, one of the contributors to We the Interwoven. Chewy, we have just about a minute left. What does it mean to you to have your voice included in this collection? I mean, you were born in Iowa, you grew up in Iowa, but there clearly was this sense of feeling not quite like you belonged.
I think it's about confirmation that my voice and my story is valued and it means something here, and it means something to people like the people supporting these writers like Andrea who are sort of supporting people outside of the university setting. And it's also about validation from my hometown and getting invited to do talks for like the fourth graders next week.
Nice.
And do things like that, and talking to them and all the like English professors using it in their curriculum, some of my stories, and talking to the students and showing them that, hey, literally this guy's from West Liberty and you guys can write too, and you guys, your story's valuable. So that's huge for me.
Yeah, that must feel just really empowering, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think there's a lot more writing to come?
Yes.
Good.
There's, as we speak.
And Andrea, what is the future plan for the Bicultural Fellowship?
Well, first of all, our goal is to get this book in every library in Iowa. And we want all Iowans to have a chance to read this, and our public libraries are just such an important part of being on the front lines in our wonderful communities. So next steps are to continue to contact libraries across the state, and also just to encourage readers out there to request this book. You know, our libraries will order a book if someone puts in a request for it. So that's the first. And the second thing, Charity, is that we start the second fellowship tonight.
Oh, wow.
So we have three new fellows. And they are showing up at the Writer's House doorstep at 4:30 this evening, and we'll be starting the next fellowship. So
Very exciting. We'd love
to talk to you in the future
about
that.
Definitely. Come back again. Andrea, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Andrea Wilson is the founder of the Iowa Writer's House and the editor of this collection, We the Interwoven, an anthology of bicultural Iowa. I was also talking with Chewy Renteria and Sadegat Alieva, who are both contributors to this collection. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.